March 24th, 2022, and we are the Housing Authority of the City of Austin Board of Commissioners. We're meeting, and I will ask Mr. Gerber to call the roll for the Housing Authority, the Austin Affordable Housing Authority, the Austin Affordable Public Facilities Corporation, Austin Pathways, Blueprint Housing Solutions, Equity, and the Southwest Housing Compliance Corporation.
Mr. Chairman, also for Pathways Asset Management and South Congress PFC.
Okay.
Commissioner Bailey?
Here.
Commissioner Duncan Hall?
Present.
Commissioner Carrington?
Present.
Commissioner Apostolo?
Present.
And Chairman Ritchie?
Present. We have a quorum of the board. We are officially called to order at 12:20 p.m. on Thursday, March 24th, 2022.
Mr. Chairman, with your approval, we will hold off on going initially to the housing. Well, I guess the first item of business would actually be saying the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah. So let's stand, and Commissioner Apostolo, will you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Mr. Chairman, under the HACA agenda, there is public communication. Is it just Lupe? Okay, great. Ms. Garcia is here. She has signed up under Citizens Communication, but we'll take her under Citizens Communication as well as the Citywide Advisory Board update. So, Lupe, would you like to come on up and public communications? Yeah. We're so glad to see you.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Okay. I will be reading the minutes for March 24th. Call to order. Roll call. So, never mind. Wrong page. Okay. March 8, 2022 at 10 a.m. Meeting call to order at 10:05 by President Lupe Garcia. Presentation, Michael Ross stated HACA will no longer accept partial payments for rent. COVID-19 cases have decreased. Travis County announced $9.1 million is available in rental assistance. Hank Moreno is the new HACA safety coordinator. He has walked HACA properties and spoke with managers. He plans to attend all resident council meetings and speak with residents. Mike Gerber shared updates regarding the community rooms, Chalmers Park construction, and the opening of the health clinic at Chalmers East. Francisco Gallegos with United Way for Greater Austin will assist residents with text preparation. Claudia Connor with Austin Parks and Recreation announced a focus group will be created for Silker Park. Parks and Recreation has a summer youth work program. The HACA community development announcements. Lilani Villegas asked residents to contact Evelyn Holmes or Lilani if they were interested in participating in the Resident Senior Mayfest Planning Committee. Barbara Jackson mentioned scholarships are available on HACA website. She provided a list of partners on site. Nancy Garcia is overseeing the Summer Youth Work Initiative. For more information, contact Nancy at HACA.org. Daniel Reese discussed Rosewood Home Ownership Program. Murphy Rowland provided workforce, IDADs, and IMOMS updates. Catherine Crago shared information regarding Amplify Austin. Anthony Schumacher provided updates on the vaccine clinics at the Austin Public Health. He also provided bringing health home updates. New business, IMOMS program, property updates. Lopez Santarita provided updates. Meeting adjourned at 11:23 a.m. So, I have one announcement. iMoms was a great success. We had over 26 ladies. Right now, we have 42 ladies that have joined. So, iMoms will be with iDads, and the concept of this is bringing the family back to the table. Thank you.
What is and what the work is that you all
do? iMoms is for single parents, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, aunts, uncles, anybody that has a support for the family and for the kids. We're also, this is also for a couple, wife and mother and father that can join. What we're going to try to do is bringing the family together again since we were separated for almost 2 years. So we have noticed that some of the children had fallen back on school, so we want to be able to bring some type of support for them, be able to reunite this family back together and bring everybody back to the table where they can have discussions about educational, finances, anything that are needs that's important in their lives. One of the topics right now that we're going to be discussing is domestic violence. So during all this pandemic, there was, as you know, a lot of tragedy happening, a lot of loss. So that is one of my biggest main concerns with iMoms. And being a single parent myself for many years, I know the struggle. And the struggle is that back in my days, there were no supports like the one we have now. And so this will be something that the iMoms are looking forward to. We had two meetings. Generally, the first one was just to see who was interested. The second one was when they came to Santa Rita, and we ended up with 26 ladies. They talked about their needs, their aspects of what was going on, why we're there to offer. We had Urban League there. We had Southwest Keys there. Every meeting will have be able to get that support that they need and resources that they need to get to. That's what it's all about.
iDads program.
Yes,
which,
it is. We're going to be working together. We're going to bring iDads and iMoms back to the table.
It's a beautiful thing.
Thank you.
I've got a question. Do you have funding?
I typically work. I am a community leader, so I have a lot of private sponsors. Sponsors that are willing to step up as far as I've created a food pantry, back to school backpacks, back to school shoe drive, back to school code for kids, women's conference, and all this done is through private sponsors. Sponsors like Skidder Scott, Capital Metro, Frostbank, LULAC, Las Comadres. These are people that are interested and they're willing to step up, and this is how I do the programs.
Is there anybody from HACA that's helping with that?
Yes, Murphy Rowland. He is one of my mentors, and we'll be working together. Brandy Pitts, my Roth specialist, was also working. So we're going to try to see if down the future we'll be able to get a grant. First, my whole thing behind is to prove that this is a worthy program for that that we can continue.
Come back to the board and let us know if you're having problems.
I will, sir. Thank you so much.
Two more questions.
Yes, ma'am.
I am delighted to hear that you are working with these other nonprofit community groups, because that way you're constantly spreading the word in the community and using them as resources as well. And we want to be able to do that with all of the activities that we have going on with our tenants in the Housing Authority.
Mm-hmm.
I do work with other properties. Not only Santa Rita gets this benefit. I spread everything that I get, I spread throughout the community, through other 18 properties. So far this year, we have given food and clothing, gift cards to 12 properties.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to say something. We're including in that. She's a very sharing person, so Chalmers, Rosewood, Selena, and BTW. So since we're down the street, we're friends, and she shares what her sponsors give to her with other properties, and I'm one of those that goes to pick it up. Thank you.
Great.
So among your sponsors, one I didn't hear, maybe it was just an oversight, is HEB one of your sponsors?
No, sir.
Have you approached them?
Yes, but because I am not a nonprofit, I don't have a 501, they won't commit. So that's why.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We will continue to work with iMoms, and we're excited to work with iMoms, and we'll try to build up capacity. A big part of what we do is helping to build up capacity of startups, and so we're excited about this one, and we'll continue to work on that.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Olivia, for your leadership. Kendra Esther is also here, who's the vice chair of the Santa Rita Resident Council.
And
Kendra, we're glad you're...
And I want to make it very clear, y'all, that without my team, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. So I have a great team to work with. They supported me in what I do, and also HACA supports on what I do. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the public who would like to offer comments to the board? With that said, public communication then is closed for all of the board meetings that are open today. Mr. Chairman, with your permission, we'll go, we're going to set the HACA agenda aside and the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation agenda aside. We'll come back to that in just a few moments. We're going to start working through the remaining items that have a similarity to them. All of the board meetings, this is our annual board meeting, so each item is going to be opened for the consent. We'll open the consent agenda, which for each of these items is the board minutes from the last time a board meeting was held, as well as a ratification resolution to resolve any irregularities which may have occurred over the course of the previous year. We'll indicate that there is no need for an executive session and there's no other items to come before you all, and then we'll close. So there'll be a series of three votes for each one of these, and we'll just work our way through them. Mr. Chairman, with your approval, we'll start with Austin Affordable PFC.
Yes, please proceed.
Staff is requesting approval of the consent agenda, which again includes the board minutes from November 18th, 2021, as well as resolution number 00092, approving a resolution to resolve any irregularities which may have occurred during the previous year.
So moved.
Second. Chuck made the motion. Commissioner Abasula seconded it.
Great. Are there any objections?
Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
And just to clarify, we also need to now, with any vote that the board takes on an item, now need to ask the public, is there anyone wishing to speak on this item? So that's a new city requirement. Is there any member of the public who wished to speak on that item?
Pardon me for a second. Can you explain that to Commissioner Bailey, how that came about?
I was fixing to ask.
Sure. Because of actually our work during the Zoom calls that we were Zoom board meetings, one of the things that we did was ask people if they had any comments to make before each item, just to make sure we didn't miss any member of the public. One of the frequent participants in those calls thought that was a great practice and urged City Council to approve that and require that for all boards and commissions. So we just got word that it's going to be required for all boards and commissions. So we're complying with that.
Just do like the librarian that sent responses to the House Investigating Committee on which books should be pulled and said, we don't have to do that.
We'll pick our fights. Commissioners, there's no action items, nor is there a need for an executive session, so we would request a resolution to adjourn Austin Affordable PFC.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 And Austin Affordable PSC is adjourned at 12:35.
Commissioner Bailey, I just want you to know that this is an example where no good deed goes unpunished.
The second meeting we're opening up is Austin Pathways Incorporated. On the consent agenda is, again, the same two items, the first being for the board meeting last held on March 26, 2020. Is there any member of the public wishing to speak regarding any of these items before the board? Seeing none, we'll ask for a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? There's no action items, there's no executive session, and we can adjourn Austin Pathways Incorporated.
So moved.
Second.
Commissioner Ritchie, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
And Austin Pathways is adjourned at 12:36. Next item, the next agenda is Blueprint Housing Solutions. Again, the same consent items before the board for, and this is for the board minutes summary for the board meeting that was last held on March 26th of 2020. Is there any member of the public wishing to comment on this item? Seeing that there's none, can we have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Commissioner Ritchie motions, Commissioner Apostola seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Passes. There's no need for any further action. There's no executive session. Ask for a motion to adjourn Blueprint Housing Solutions.
So moved.
Commissioner Ritchie moves. Commissioner Apostolo seconds. All in favor say aye.
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 And Blueprint Housing Solutions is adjourned at 12:37. Moving on to Equity CLT. Similar consent items. This one for board minutes for the board meeting that was last held on March 26th of 2020. And then Resolution 008. To resolve any irregularities. Is there any member of the public wishing to comment on this item? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve?
So move.
Commissioner Carrington motions.
Second.
Commissioner Bailey seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. Is there a motion to, there's no need for any further action items or nor an executive session. We can move to adjournment. Anyone move? Commissioner Apostola moves to adjourn.
Second.
Commissioner Duncan Hall moves seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And Equity CLT is adjourned at 12:38. Moving on to Pathways Asset Management. Moving to the consent agenda, again for the board meeting that was last held on March 26, 2020. And approval of resolution number 9, resolving any irregularities that may have previously occurred. Is there any member of the public wishing to comment on this item? Seeing that there's none, we have a motion to approve.
So move.
Commissioner Apostolo moves to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Commissioner Bailey seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Have it. No executive session is needed. There's no further items to come before the board on Pathways Asset Management. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I move.
Second. Commissioner Carrington moves to adjourn. Commissioner Apostola seconds. All in favor say aye.
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 Passes unanimously, and Pathways Asset Management adjourns at 12:39. Moving to South Congress PFC. Similar consent agenda items for the last board meeting held on March 25th, 2020, and a resolution number 11 to resolve any irregularities from previous resolutions. Is there any member of the public wishing to comment on this item? Seeing that there's none, is there a motion to approve?
So move.
Commissioner Carrington moves to approve. Commissioner Duncan Hall moves to second. All in favor say aye.
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 Motion, any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. There's no other further action items. There's no need for an executive session. And is there a motion to adjourn this?
I move.
Commissioner Carrington moves to adjourn. Commissioner Apostolo seconds. All in favor of adjournment?
Aye.
South Congress PFC is adjourned at 12:40 p.m. Last item is Southwest Housing Compliance Corporation. This is to approve the board consent agenda. It's to approve the board minutes for March 26th of 2020 and resolution number 92, approving and addressing any irregularities which may have occurred previously. Is there any member of the public wishing to comment on this item? Seeing that there's none, is there a motion to approve? Commissioner Apostolo moves to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Commissioner Carrington seconds. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed say no. Ayes have it. There's no need for further action items. There's no need for an executive session. I would pause for just a second here under report items. Mr. Cummings, it's been a long time since you've spoken to the board on anything involving SACC. Is there anything you'd like to say?
Good afternoon, Michael Cummings, Vice President with SACC. Just a quick update on the status of our contract. We alluded to, or we spoke about earlier today. Again, our current contract's through January 31st of 2023, and we were in Washington, D.C. a couple weeks back and did hear from HUD in a conference, the National NAMA Conference, National Assisted Housing Management Association Conference. The Deputy Assistant Secretary spoke, the Director of OAMPO, which the program that is over our PBCA program spoke, and they basically spent 30 seconds on the question on the status of the procurement and said, you know, it's important. They're being very careful moving forward with the procurement, but look for something, and those were their words, look for something by the end of the year, which is what we've heard for many, many years now. So it does, I think they recognize the importance of it, but they have other priorities, and we don't anticipate any significant movement on the status of contract in the next year, and expect we'll be back here about this time probably talking about the same things. It looks like it'll be a ways away.
Which is great news for us, and obviously we're continuing to do a strong job for HUD. And I will also note that Michael has helped spearhead the formation of a coalition of other performance-based contract administrators, which is making sure that our voice is heard within HUD as this procurement does kind of work its way through the process. So we'll continue to be active in this space and working with Orlando Cabrera and others to make sure that they understand the important work that we're doing. And actually, when we were up in D.C., when that meeting was happening, coincidentally, I was in D.C., as was our chairman, and we had an opportunity to meet with some other folks from the coalition at our council's office, and it was nice to, you know, be together, you know, after such an extended period, but also to hear the agreement of among folks to really make sure that, you know, HUD understands the experience that we're bringing to the table, as well as ensuring that there's a fair and open competition when the time comes to re-procure. Are there any questions, commissioners?
I got a question. Mike, what do you think HUD's response would be if we went to them and said, look, we go through this every year. It causes consternation at your end, at our end. Keep working on it, but why don't you let us sign a 5-year contract? And so, you know, this doesn't come up every year. We don't have to. Right. And we understand at the end of the 5 years, we may be out. But what do you think? I mean, Orlando would have better sense of it probably than I do.
That question has come up before, and I believe over the summer in the LHAC group, as we're calling it, Local Housing Administration Coalition, that very question had come up. And I think it got kind of short-circuited by the fact that HUD then came out and said, here's another extension until January 31st, 2023. But there had been some talk about whether or not, you know, HUD would consider something like that if it perhaps included some element of, parts of it that they wanted to renegotiate. But extend further so that, to your point, that we don't have to keep going through this every year. I think they know they have a very good thing in the existing contract administrators. So it's food for thought. But, it has been discussed, but I don't think and Mike, from your recollection, it probably didn't get any further than those few conversations that we had. But
we like the concept, though.
Yeah. I mean, 5 years would be wonderful. You know, but you know that's the conversation we have related.
And I take it that the attitude of the current administration is somewhat different from the last one.
In many ways, the last administration actually was ambivalent and just chose not to do anything with it. I think Democrats have historically wanted to mess with it. Republicans have historically wanted to just kind of defer and not really focus on it. And then we've hit a series of crises that have, you know, tied folks up from really having the time to sort of navigate it. We keep saying, Michael and I, as we've talked about it, we keep saying that when we hear that that HUD has the, because, this is a matter of a lot of litigation. When they say we've put together a working group with the General Accountability Office and with the Government Accountability Office and with the Department of Justice to navigate this procurement, then we'll know that we're, that we will feel like all the various disciplines are coming together to navigate this thing, anticipating litigation and trying to mitigate that. I think then we'll be concerned. Right now it's, really just kind of, long-time HUD staff who don't have the clearance to really move it anywhere.
Agreed.
Don't put that in the middle.
Let sleeping dogs lie. That's sort of...
But we'll continue to be hopeful, and we'll continue to engage HUD, and we'll continue to keep this board updated. There really just hasn't been a whole lot to report, and I think the pandemic just had them kick it down the calendar for an extended.
Tell Orlando period. I'll buy him a Bob, or if he comes back, I didn't think I was going to get him out of there when he had that. I gave him a Bob.
Oh, over at Matt's.
Over at Matt's.
Yeah. Fair enough. Are there any other questions for SACC? Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
That concludes staff reports. I think we can take a motion to adjourn. Commissioner Ritchie Commissioner Carrington moves to adjourn, and Commissioner Ritchie seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. And Southwest Housing Compliance Corporation is adjourned at 12:47. So now, commissioners, we'll go back to the HACA agenda.
Now, Mike, you realize my pet peeve that we talked about a while ago, this would be a great opportunity for us to just thumb our nose at the city because there's no sanctions they can apply against us. And they'll say, well, we'll just say that your meetings are invalid unless you do that. They can't do that. They don't have that kind of authority. And we'll just say, see you, and by the way, we don't want to file any more of those stupid annual reports either. I talked to their ethics guy about it. He said, well, we could write you a parking ticket. And I said, I'm not going to pay it. What are you going to do? So I understand. I know you go along to get along. And I do too. But
I enjoy a good fight every once in a while, but this is the fight I want to pick.
And I'll let it go this
not
time.
Not worth fighting over.
It's still there.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Commissioner Bailey. Moving on to the HACA main agenda, we've already gone through public comment and citywide. We're at the consent agenda. Those two items are approving the board minutes from February 17th of 2022. And the second item is resolution 2741, all the others, approving a resolution to ratify all the actions that you all took during fiscal year ending 2022 in order to resolve any irregularities. We ask for a motion to approve. Commissioner Apostolo moves to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Ritchie seconds. Actually, you're chair of this one, so I'll ask for another commissioner to second. Commissioner Duncan Hall seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Let me ask you to hold that vote. Is there any member of the public wishing to comment on this item? Seeing that there's none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? And the ayes have it. We'll go to the action items. Item number three on the HACA agenda is the first item is resolution 2742, amending HACA's bylaws regarding public communication. This item is a very straightforward item, and it incorporates what we've talked about, the requirement for public boards and commissions to provide citizens communication opportunities for board meetings going forward. And we would ask for y'all's approval to adapt our bylaws to this new city requirement.
So I have a comment first. To each of you, when it's your time, you can have on your headstone, this is your legacy of open government. You improve open government.
I have a response to that, but I'll let it go.
Is there Is there any member of the public wishing to comment on this item? Seeing that there's none, is there a motion to approve this item?
So move.
Commissioner Carrington moves to approve. Commissioner Apostolo seconds. Is there any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
4 ayes, and noted that Commissioner Bailey opposed
that. Send that over to the city and say, what are y'all going to do about this? See, that's what I like is the fact that they can't do anything to us. You know, I win before we even start. Okay. Now, they may make your life
they can't do anything to you.
Well, I tell you, why don't we negotiate? We'll agree to do this if we don't have to file those financial statements every year.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll agree with that.
Commissioners, I would propose we move on to item number 4.
You know what I do on mine? I just list my name, and when they want all of my clients that are 5% of my, I say, go see my ethics filings with the State Ethics Commission. I'm not going to repeat that stuff, especially repeat stuff I don't have to repeat. I'm sorry. Just proceed.
I'll try that this April when I have to fill mine out. I'll list that.
Item number 4 is resolution number 2743, approving the operating budgets for the fiscal year April 1st, 2022 through March 31st of 2023. Ms. Chen did a wonderful job addressing the budget issues during the Budget Administration Committee meeting just prior to this. Barbara, is there anything additional that you would like to share with the commissioners?
Good afternoon, commissioners, and Mr. Gerber and the staff. As we just went through the presentation earlier during the finance committees. So here we are to propose the fiscal year 2023 starting from April 1st. 2022 to March 31st, 2023, the annual budget for the HACA all department and programs, excluding the PBIA properties budget, as you recall, that we proposed to the board back in November 2021 for the PBIA properties budget, which is based on a calendar year's budget. Today we are here to propose to the board that we request the total operating revenue for the next fiscal year is $587,257,892 in revenue. We also propose a total expenses of $583,296,618. In addition to our operating expenses, we also make a transfer donation from our SHCC program to support our PBIA's operation of $635,501. The result of our fiscal year 2023's operation that we are going to have about $3,325,773. And I'm going to just kind of highlight a few points since we already went through all the a little bit more details earlier. So basically, we all know that there's a pass-through in our housing assistance payment format that we receive the revenue from either from the federal HUD program or from the local city governments, that the total we receive of $543,620,317 in revenue, also in HUB, which we are going to disperse and pay for the families in the same amount. So we will end at zero incomes from the HUB payment. So that's a pass-through program, and this is including the that we provide housing assistance payment to our assisted housing department through our Lisa Garcia's department, and also to provide assistance payment to the Dresden in the city of Austin. We also provide the housing assistance payments through our SHCC programs to pay for the residents in the states of Texas and Arkansas. And this year's budget, we took over to about 2 months that we met. First, we met my finance team. We met with every department, then to go over the detailed budget. Then with Mr. Gerber and the Sylvia, that we also, once the department, the finance come up with a proposed preliminary budget, we met again and we met with Mr. Gerber and the Sylvia to go over the detailed budget again. So like I say, it took us overall 2 months, and it was very, very detailed, very thorough discussion. And this is what we propose to the board for the 2023's budget. And as you can see in the board package, it was very detailed. With the first page is the summary, and that was all the department, all the programs, the detailed operating revenue and the expenses. So do you have any questions for me?
One, let me just comment and say, although I wasn't here for your presentation, but I did catch the tail end of it, and it was thorough, just listening to you and watching the last couple of slides. And I think, as the other commissioner said, that's something we haven't had in the past. So I commend you on that. I do wonder about, over the past year, we have increased salaries. And I think part of that related to trying to help families out going through COVID. I did notice in your presentation you talked about the increase in inflation and how that eats into those increases. Do you or Mr. Gerber contemplate doing a higher increase above what we have been doing traditionally, because we do this merit base increase between 2% and 3% per year?
This year we continue to use the 3% the merit increase now in the budget, the adjusted merit increase including in our budget. And when I doing the presentation, I say that we were doing a comparison compared to prior year, that's a little bit higher because we just did a COLA adjustment against 3%. So I will have a discussion with Mr. Gerber, see if there's any. We need a few further discussion, and we are going to evaluate and assess in the future. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, thanks, Sylvia, to remind me. And we also is going to go out to bid for to hire workforce study. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do a salary study.
Salary study. So we are going to do that this year too.
Okay. And then the other part that you brought up in the presentation was the fact that you had a number of families who are still unemployed, and what are we doing in terms of, or what do we contemplate into in terms of workforce and skills development training so those families can become gainfully employed, given that we've got in the market a lot of positions available that are paying a lot higher salaries.
Sylvia, you want to take that one?
Yeah, Sylvia, it's going to help.
Good afternoon, Commissioner. Sylvia Blanco. Yes, to that question, Mr. Chair, we are pleased to hear back from Department of HUD on finally expanding our Family Self-Sufficiency Program through our PBRA portfolio. We've been on a bit of a pause because of the conversion from public housing over to the RAD program, but this now will allow us to begin to offer the Family Self-Sufficiency Program, which provides that case management and a lot of the close monitoring and helps them to connect with the resources needed to get their marketable skills increased and improved. And of course, the escrow account is a wonderful feature, basically the capstone of the FSS program. We've had many, many graduates over the years graduate for with tens of thousands of dollars and able to either kickstart a home of their own or getting more reliable transportation or really any other kind of self-sufficiency needs. So we're really excited about kicking that off later this year.
Okay.
If there's any other specific questions related to the budget, I think that there may be two other items related to the budget that are maybe additions to. Is there any other items or comments about the budget that anyone would like to talk about? With that said,
I actually do have one other question, and it really goes to more of Lisa's program. I mean, how much, once you come forward, because I can imagine you're going to have a real challenging year, given the increases in property values, home sales, and all the folks moving in. I guess at the next meeting or some meeting in the future, can you come back and talk to us about different strategies that you are going to use? Because I just think, again, this is going to be another tough year, and you're probably going to be housing fewer families than you did the year before.
Yes, I certainly may. And I'll be meeting with HUD to go over, now that the budget has been passed. So we're going to go through the two-year projection tool with the actual numbers for the 2022 budget. And then we'll be able to project out with the number of families we have on the street right now, which is about 500 searching. If we're going to be able to issue additional vouchers, number one. Number two, looking at our payment standards again to see if there's, you know, some room to increase them. We're at 105%, but that's one of the things right now we continue to hear. The costs are just so high, as we know. We have been working with the Apartment Association to do some, right now we've been doing online go-to meetings. We've been primarily advertising the Emergency Housing Voucher Program, but we're going to extend it out more to do the regular you know, marketing for the regular voucher program, and then also some more concentrated efforts with the Austin Affordable Housing Portfolio to do meetings, you know, directly with the property owners to see what availability they have for units. And then, you know, those are some of the strategies we're looking at right now, but I'll definitely can come back and do a broader report out. And then one other thing is with families that are moving, we did meet with Legal Aid recently to talk about, just to sort of talk about some challenges they're seeing right now because families are moving, wanting to move, they put in their notice, and they can't find a place. So we're going to change the sort of strategy with that where we're not going to. We're going to introduce a policy where when we meet with the families, the eligibility specialists, letting them know that before we're going to issue you move paperwork, we'll give you a rent estimate, and you need to take a look around and see if there's something available out there before we put any notices into your own to your owner, because it's better to stay where you're at than to lose an opportunity for a home. So those are just some of the strategies we have sort of in play now, but I can do a broader report next month.
Okay.
For sure.
And the reason why I came out before I got out of my car, I got a call from a friend who told me his daughter's, and she lives in a market rate apartment, it literally increased by $1,000 to renew her lease. She went from $2,100 up to right just like $3,000, $29. It was literally $1,000 increase. And so he just said, you know, because she, you know, he wondered whether she could qualify in some of our market rate properties. And I said, I have no idea, but I thought that was a pretty astronomical increase.
Right. Yeah.
Is that across the board in the city?
We're seeing that across the board. Yep.
Yeah, we're seeing
huge increases.
Yes, this is a market rate property down in South Austin, but I was just thinking a $1,000 increase. Usually, you see maybe 50, 100, you know, from one year to the next. But this is like $1,000. This is just so.
Where we have the contracts, but they just bump it up and it's not enough money. Could we, you know, and the state has a rainy day fund, and I kind of look at our unrestricted reserves as kind of a rainy day fund. Could we take some of our own money and add it to what we get from HUD to offset some of this loss, this increase?
Well, we can't do that through the calculation of rent because there's particular rules in terms of how we calculate the rent, so you can't add money to that. What we can do, like, I think once I have that meeting with HUD where we have a better idea what our funding looks like for the HAP portion, is we could make a decision to increase the payment standards that would be covered by the HUD money, you know, I mean, from the federal source. I don't know that, I've not heard that you can add to it.
So just to clarify, HUD comes up with what they determine they think the fair market rent for the area should be.
That's right.
We've gone up ahead and said, yeah, we think they're low. We're going to give you not just 100% of it, we're going to give you 105%.
Right.
What Lisa's proposing to do is come back and probably look at 110, or you can go up to 120, right?
We can go up to 120.
And even higher in some circumstances if there's...
With a waiver. Yeah. And we, but that really comes down to we need to look at what our...
And that additional money comes from HUD.
Correct.
It does. Which means we would serve fewer people in the program. But if you're having such low utilization, if you're challenged to get your utilization of the vouchers up, getting people actually in units, renting units, then you know you have insufficient supply for the demand, so you want to raise the rent.
And so you're telling me that because of our contracts with HUD, we couldn't take $2 million of our unrestricted reserve, set up an account to offset some of that increase in the city. And I know HUD sets the guidelines, but Austin is such an unusual situation where those guidelines just not working.
Yeah, I'd caution us to do that because then it's, you know, because right now we want to spend up to the max. Basically, that puts you in a deficit position. So you can always, if you're in a deficit position and you don't have enough money to cover the housing assistance payment, then you'd have to take it from our administrative pot that we have out there, any kind of reserve we have, which I would not, you know, I'm just thinking through it. And
but as an example, we've actually sort of done a test run on that. So Lisa has to get her utilization to between 98% and 100%. So it's a very narrow runway that she's got to land on. If she overshoots, if she issues too many vouchers and pays too much rent out, then she goes into what's called shortfall. We've been willing to accept a higher level of shortfall than most agencies, and we've been able to manage it because we do have ready dollars. So when she went into shortfall a couple of years ago, when we said, you know, we agreed, well, let's go into shortfall, it was an opportunity to help like 20 families. And we went through $500,000 pretty quick with just those additional 20.
And where did that money come from?
Out of unrestricted reserve.
So. Well, actually, it comes when you go into the shortfall, then you're on a shortfall. You have to report to HUD, and then if the money is available in the federal budget for the shortfall funds, then you apply for it and you get more money.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
You push it to the limit, and if the money's available, then you have to.
If it's available and you put your money in there, it's not available anymore. Why use our money when we can use their money?
It's better to use their money.
Yes.
So then you push it, and then exactly in those cases, you know, then we're restricted. What they'll say is, when you're in shortfall, you can no longer issue any more vouchers, and you have to do some other cost-saving measures. I have to meet with them every single month and have a wonderful, nice conversation, and it's fine. We have good working relationships. But then at the end, they'll do and in December of the end of the year, they'll do a reconciliation. They'll say, okay, it looks like you did everything we said you needed to do to get out of shortfall. Looks like you're needing another, I'm just giving an example, $500,000. We'll go ahead and give that to you. So in a sense, then that gives you some more money. So in this market, I think what I would say is, I'm going to make sure that meeting gets scheduled with HUD again and before the next meeting. And then try to see that our payment standards are set in such a way that we allow people an opportunity to find housing, because we want to make sure that the more you spend in one year, the more you get the next year. So we want to make sure our payment standards are set appropriately so people can find housing. And so that's what I would probably recommend.
And in the long run, I agree, but if we get hit where we have 20 families that we don't have enough money for them and they're put out on the streets, when we first started becoming more than just a housing authority, the idea was that HUD was cutting back and cutting back, so we were going to make it up by buying shopping centers and using that money and then buying apartments and using that money. This seems to me to be a perfect place for HUD's cutting us back. Well, that's fine. We anticipated that, so we went into the business, the development business, and all kinds of things that we do. If that's not a place to use this money, when is?
Well, I think it's apples and oranges. I think HUD has not cut us back. I think they've actually given us more money year over year. What's happened is that the market has moved away from us, and in such a dynamic market, when year over year prices go up $1,000 or something like that, what we're seeing is just the inability to keep up, and folks don't have any requirement in the city to accept a Section 8 voucher because that ordinance got preempted by the legislature. So we would never be able to keep up with the demand. And even though we have some families who are searching, and we have a lot of families that are searching for units, the challenge really isn't the challenge is convincing landlords, which is why Lisa's working so much with the apartment association, to get them to accept the voucher and to do good in the community and to work with us as a steady, because it's a steady stream of payment, and to feel good about that. And to try to tame some of the market forces.
Wouldn't our money on that we've got set aside to take care of issues like that, wouldn't that act as a sweetener to the landlords?
We can't match it with the federal money.
This isn't federal. It's our money.
No, but the federal money, in order to participate in the Section 8 program, the person goes to a rigorous list of what are the sources of your income, where are you getting money from, in order to qualify. So it would be deemed as additional income because HUD would not recognize our contribution, I don't believe. They would see it as additional income to the individual, which means that because we've put money in, that person may actually wind up paying more rent in a kind of a squirrely way. Am I thinking about that in the right way?
Yeah, in a sense, yeah.
And what we could do to help is on the landlord side. We could go and put sweeteners for the landlord to accept Section 8 tenants. And so we've talked about that, and actually we are doing that in the emergency housing voucher.
Well, it sounds to me like, these are just,
it's a good idea to try to...
And y'all have already thought about it, but I all these years, I think we got all this money, we have all these problems because of Austin's economy. We ought to be using that money.
So,
well, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to just add, one of the great strategies that we are doing with that money is through Austin Affordable and having more units be made available to families that have vouchers, because with what Mike said just a moment ago, our struggle is really finding the owners willing to lease to them. When the market's so dynamic and they're going to have, multitudes of applicants for any one unit, the need for the units is what's most important. And so having that money be made available to have more affordable units come online in this community is what's absolutely, positively the absolute best thing we could be doing right now. And I'm so thankful for Austin Affordable. We have close to 1,000 families in our program leasing units from Austin Affordable right now. And again, really working those relationships so as soon as those come online that we can get people to have that opportunity is really a blessing for, this city and for the families that have vouchers. So that's I would say the best use of the money.
Well, see, I'm not sure that's the way I understand it. The way it's always been sold to me is that if the developers want to use our tax-exempt status, they'll agree to put those things in there.
Yes, and that's true. And it's
so it has nothing to do with our pot of money over here.
Well, it creates additional units
available.
That
pot of money gives us the equity into as we buy into those developments.
So it's in the so Chuck, the real issue comes down to is it's kind of like as a landlord, it's your choice, and you look at two families and you decide, oh, this one family, husband works at Dell, the wife works at Samsung, they may be entry-level employees, whereas you got this other family, the wife may be the manager at McDonald's and the other one may be and the husband may be a janitor. You make the call in terms of what's the risk to you. You presume that the family who's working in tech is less of a risk in terms of making that payment. Although the family who's on Section 8, you're pretty much guaranteed that the housing authority is going to make that money. But it's your orientation as the landlord in terms of how you look at the families. And that's essentially that's what it really comes down to.
And if you had a pot of money set aside that we call the Section 8 support fund, we could tell the landlord, the janitor and the McDonald's person has the same amount of money as these other folks because we'll make sure they do.
Yeah.
And it just seems to me that, and I'll get off of this, that it's a lot of bureaucratic mess. And you know my training is, you know, he'd say, well, if that doesn't work, tell me a way to work it.
Yeah.
And it's just food for thought.
Yeah, well, we can have this discussion a little bit later, but I just know with us approving the budget, I was glad you said you got this meeting coming up with HUD to discuss our situation. And Austin is, you know, I think we're probably the leader in this sort of what I would call problematic area, but there are a lot of other cities around the country that are going through this. And I had basically given Lisa's name to a gentleman at NARO to visit with her to get some insight as to how we're addressing it, because he's hearing it from others and they're looking at him as to how to address it. So for what it's worth, you probably get a call from Eric. Commissioner Duncan Hall, I think I saw your hand.
Yeah. I guess it was exactly this issue. Our the need for greater project-based units and including or increasing the number of units in a property and getting away from the choice that the landlord. I think the landlord would have in these circumstances, because I think that's the easiest way to go. And there's always going to be that choice, and there's always going to be that innate prejudice in terms of if I have to select between someone who has what one would call a higher paying secure job versus another one that may be more questionable.
Yeah.
So if I were given the choice in terms of how to use the money, I would use the money in making sure that I had those more affordable units in the property. And the fact that we're now going into these higher opportunity areas and buying properties in those areas, that would be where I would choose to bring up more and more units in our negotiation with our partners and development partners. And secondly, once we use our so-called rainy fund money, we have to understand that ordinarily when you use those money, it's for one-time purchases. And what we're doing, the way you're suggesting, it would be continuing costs. And that is not, I think, a good idea.
Well, the continuing costs would be covered by more income coming in. And when then you would allocate it, say, $200 million.
Well, when you say a rainy day fund, you're not assuming that there's more money coming.
Well, I am assuming that. Well, it's like the state. The state replenishes it with oil and gas money. Now, it doesn't always work. I mean, you know, right now, oil is it still over $100 a barrel? But it might drop down to $8 next week.
But HACA's Rainy Day Fund has been largely built off the back of SHCC and on the back of Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. SHCC isn't sustainable. At some point, it'll get rebid. Austin Affordable is, and so that's why we've invested more heavily there. Just by way of example, and then I would suggest maybe we move to an end of...
Well, now, let me, Mike, unless we got a deadline, I think it's a good thing to talk about.
Oh, I totally agree. I think there's you know, an interesting thing with Austin Affordable. So, Ron, when we put equity into a property, if we take $2 million out of our rainy day fund, and we out of our, let's not call it the rainy day fund, out of the unrestricted reserves, we put that into a particular property and take a bigger equity position within that deal. How much are we realized to build 250 units? How much are we likely to see, just ballpark terms, in terms of the immediate developer fee, and then also because we're a co-developer in the deal, and have ownership in the deal, and then also an ongoing cash flow.
Sure. So let me clarify this. Prior to prices on properties going out the roof, which we can't afford now ourselves, we were investing our own equity into these deals. We can buy a property for $6 million, $5 million, $7 million. Now you can't buy one. You got to pay $286 million for a property, which you saw. So we've shifted our focus and rearranged our negotiations with our partners and said, we're not putting any money in. Your value is what we're giving you to the dance is that exemption. And so we should get paid for that exemption. I don't need to put equity in. I don't get as much, but I get a huge acquisition fee. And on average, we're probably averaging somewhere between $600,000 and $800,000 a deal every time we close a deal up front.
And then ongoing cash flow?
Then we get ongoing cash flow, and then we get 10% of
the
equity.
How much is typically ongoing cash flow?
Typically, probably, we're averaging about between $250,000 and $300,000 a year.
And the tax exemption is worth between $1 million to $2 million a year?
Between $1 million and $2 million, depending on what that is.
And that lets us insist on more affordable housing.
It does, and you know, every property has to agree to taking our vouchers. I think, as Lisa said, I think AHC, while we're trying to do our best, we've got actually 1,011 vouchers in our program as of yesterday. You know, we're doing some things for one thing, advertising. You know, I was on our websites, and we don't advertise vouchers welcome. I mean, that's, you know, and that's kind of on me. You just take it for granted. We're in Go Section 8, and we do those things. But in this day and age where people are on social media and all this stuff, we got to do a better job of advertising those. And I think we're going to have an ongoing discussion, and you know, there's a lot of pressure on us on these acquisitions to bring in a deeper dive of affordability and require more 60% units. The problem we're having is the cost of doing this is especially if we go into higher opportunity areas, it's causing a little bit more stress on our investment partners. You know, there's a balance there, but we are trying to go we don't have anything for you today in terms of new acquisitions, but as we move forward, we're trying to do a deeper dive in getting you those 60% units where we know we can serve more people under that affordable guise. But it's a good windfall for us because the increase you saw from last year's budget in the rental income is solely because of the deals we did last year. We increased our rental income going up by about $1.2 million just on doing those five deals.
How did inflation enter into that?
What's that?
Did inflation enter into that?
No, but the rent increases on the market side have come into that, and we get a piece of that because we're doing 50% of these units at an affordable level, sometimes more. But the other side, as you've talked about, the rental increases Commissioner Ritchie just brought up are just astronomical. Now, we're not pushing like most people are, and obviously we're not downtown, so we're not seeing $1,000 a month rent increases, you know, in the outskirts, you know, around our map, but we are seeing $300-$500 a month increases or annual increases, but we're not pushing them to that max at this point.
But what you do get is you get largely the only apartments in town that are saying, we'll accept vouchers. We're excited to have your voucher here. That makes Lisa's program work.
That's where I want to go. You're saying that any partner that we have, they will not refuse a person who comes to them with a voucher?
We will not turn down a voucher holder at any single property that our developers have partner with us, unless it's a criminal. You know, obviously we do a background check and things.
It's written into the contract.
It's written in.
Correct. The only exception to that is that we have a homeless. We have several vouchers that serve homeless. And other special populations. Some of those individuals are coming with extreme criminal background issues, and so the tenant selection criteria at the property may screen some of those folks out. Mm-hmm. On the Housing Choice Voucher side, they're okay for the most part. But on the emergency housing voucher and for the VASH voucher, we're dealing with. And what we've done there is Lisa and Ron have gotten together and really been working hard to identify where people can be successful, how to get, you know, setting aside units, you know, here. We don't want to over-concentrate, you know, in one area or another with an emergency housing voucher or with VASH vouchers. So we've been very careful about that, working through fair housing and other issues. But those units are the housing choice vouchers are hard to rent. Those others are the hardest to rent because you've got literally a person who was chronically homeless just days earlier, coming to their first home in quite some time.
The other reason why it's that I think Lisa's program is getting ready to be harder, because I think you're going to have a real run on the rental market, because with interest rates going up, it's going to be more expensive to build homes. So people who go to the bank have to pay higher interest rates are probably not going to build those homes, and they're going to go into the rental market, which creates additional competition for Lisa. And that's what my primary concern is. I'm looking at the market, the increase, because I think the Feds are going to raise interest rates several times this year to address inflation. And if that happens, that means you're going to have fewer people buying homes and more people going into the rental market, which puts more pressure on Lisa's programs because her folks are going to be competing, which means Ron programs, and I'm going to say Ron and Suzanne, so Suzanne does the real work.
Yeah. I was just going to comment on that portfolio that Suzanne then works on in new construction. The tools we use, which is the 4% bonds and credits, it doesn't exist this year. It's oversubscribed. We're not going to do, and those 60% guaranteed that's under the TDHCA program are 100% of those units are serving 60% and below AMI. And we can't build any of those. We've lost, you approved a couple of them. We were, 3 weeks away from closing one, and the deal fell apart because of certain things that happened in the market. So it's even harder, putting more stress on the development community to focus, you know, without those tools of credits, and the bonds are already oversubscribed. You know, we can't do you probably won't see a tax credit deal come across you this year.
It's going to be a tough year.
It's going to be a real tough year. So we're out there beating the bushes trying to find other creative ways to continue to build. And we have some properties that we're doing that on phases twos and different things like that. And you'll see those over the course of the year. But that's going to be added. That's going to add more stress to us as well. Maybe not this year because it's 2 years to build. But when you think about the pipelines, you know, 2 years down the road, you're going to see that shortage of these units, and we'll see how that plays out. But we'll continue to try to do our part.
If we've got the money to help Lisa in this coming year, if there's a way to
use the properties that we have,
that's what that money is for.
Well, the properties are for that purpose. We want to use the properties, but by federal rule we're not able to add on that additional subsidy And worse yet, even if we were to, it's not sustainable. So if you go back to the original $2 million that you were talking about, let's take put $2 million into Lisa's program. I've just shared the complications there. If we took that money and instead invested it in a property, what we end up doing is we get immediately, you know, more units for residents. We get a number of special populations that where we had these special purpose vouchers. We get those folks served where we wouldn't have had as much opportunity before. And the additional revenue that we generate gets to go into, you know, all the different services programs that we want to continue to build on, including some of the services at Ron's properties through Apartment Life and the other some of the other work that you know you're doing. It's a less rich service environment at the Austin Affordable Housing properties as it is within the Section 8 program or within the other voucher programs or at our PBRA properties as our RAD properties. But I think the biggest issue, Commissioner Bailey, respectfully, is I think it's not sustainable, and that's the hard part. We could give $2 million, you know, to it, but you know, in a year's time, the market will move even further away, and the gap will be even bigger. And then how do we fill that? So next year's 2 years becomes three, you know, $2 million becomes $3 million, becomes $4 million, and then what we are doing is what we've encourage the board to do is, again, with those equity investments, you know, we see larger cash flows come out where we can put equity in. So we try to do that. That means more money back to the authority to be able to go and...
But we're not doing that now.
We are doing that now. We've done some. We haven't done as many in the last couple of years because we haven't had to and because we haven't had the money. We've been using most of that money that we would have put in for equity for Gap, for places like Chalmers, as we've rebuilt Chalmers, and Rosewood, which is coming up this year, is going to have, Sylvia, what, $6, $7, $8 million Gap?
Ten.
So that 29 becomes 19.
Yeah, well, and I'm okay with it. I mean, that's it's for.
That's the kind of stuff we're doing.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Commissioner Mr. Gerber, can I just chip in that I think that we really appreciate Commissioner Chalking on the recommendation that $28 million that we have, yeah, it's a large numbers, but actually on average, our average monthly operating expenses, excluding the HUD payment, is $4.5 million for the agency. So for us, that fund is probably just about 6 months for rainy days. It's a big number as well, but it's really, if you look into the detail, it's only less than 6 months. And another one thing is that Lisa has a point, and we all know that HUD, if the whole issue right now, we have over 500 families in the market trying to find a unit. I think our biggest challenge right now is the affordable housing units. It's not really the funding, because right now we still have about $5 million in HUD health reserves. That's the money we waiting for us. But the issue is that our tenant cannot find an affordable housing unit. So I think that we also kind of planned, and Ron and Mike, we already have in this discussion talking about we might have to contribute put some our own money to do development. So like Lisa said, it's a blast, and it's very successful now. Well, we could afford to have over 1,000 units from our own property to provide the unit to our tenant. That's a great help. Think about it. So overall, a lot, $28 million, I can say, less than 6 months. That's if we don't do anything else just for our regular operating, pay for the utility, pay for the staff, pay for the maintenance, pay for our property, insurance, liability insurance, those type of things. So I think that right now we are focused on these are the family, trying to help the family to find the unit. And if we really can, I think that's if we can develop more affordable housing for the community, I think that's probably also going to be the biggest help, because in HUD payment is less. the funding, the mechanism for HUD funding is that if we spend $100 this year, they will give us $100 this year, next year. If we spend $120 this year, they are going to give us $120 this year. So overall, if we maintain, keep it up now, the funding, the support from the HUD payment side, HUD has been cutting admin fee side. But HUD payment side has been very consistent at 100% level, which means that whatever we need, they will definitely provide so far. So I think that we want to, that Ron is really looking into it, and especially like he just mentioned about that we lost a few deals. So he also talked about we might have in the future, we might need to have prepared to put some money in, and that's all we have. That's the 28
million. And kind of, so, I guess what I'm hearing is that the staff anyway thinks there is a better and higher use for that money.
Yes.
Than giving it to Lisa. Assuming we can find a legal way to do it.
Yeah, I would say, you know, because legally we can't do it, but also you may not remember this, but years ago when Henry was here, he even suggested just giving the Section, I think he suggested giving the Section 8 money back, because there are other housing authorities who just said, we don't want it anymore. Because they simply, it's one thing to get the Section 8 money, the operation money to pay the landlords, but they wouldn't get enough money to pay the staff to go out and negotiate with the landlords. So they just said, we're giving it up and we're not going to deal with it anymore. So that's...
Well, at some point in time, if they're not giving us enough money for your program to work, we'll just shut it down.
Well, they're not.
We're okay right now.
And that's why with admin fees.
But wait till you get to retirement.
Well, I think we're good right now. I think this year is going to be a better year, and I'm feeling optimistic, and we're going to figure this out. And I think, you know, just one last thing with what Commissioner Duncan Hall said earlier about the project basing of vouchers. I think that's a good strategy. We did it. And thank you for approving that this year. You know, 340 units of project-based vouchers created 800 units of affordable housing, or is going to create 800 units of affordable housing in this community. It's a great leverage of a resource, and I'll be visiting with Mike, and we'll decide, you know, what's the strategy. After, I want to talk to HUD first, see what the 2022 money looks like, and then what's the strategy for the next round of project-basing of vouchers, because that's going to create additional long-term affordable housing in our community, which I think is really crucial.
Before we close, Commissioner Carrington, you have been very conspicuous by your silence. One of my graduate school professors used to tell me that when I wouldn't say anything in class. But I'd like to get your thoughts on this issue.
I've just been listening. But I did pull out the Austin Affordable chart, and through our work with Austin Affordable, both on acquisitions and new construction, I come out with about 13,000 units, 13,500, something like that. I realized in looking at this chart, and maybe one of the things that would be interesting for us on this chart would to be what percentage of these units, or what, not percentages, but what are these units, how many units in each of these properties is targeted at 60% and below. Because we don't have to do them all. We don't have to do them all at 60 and below. We have to do 50%, and then we have some market rate units in there. So when we look at this 13,000 whatever, those are not all so this is a great picture of what we've done through Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. But I think it's kind of not the whole picture on what we're doing. And to go to this how we use our money discussion, as Ron says, you know, properties are getting much more expensive. We're losing out. We're not being able to purchase. And from what we can build up that reserve, those unrestricted reserves, then I don't think we're going to be stupid about it. Because we all know real estate goes up, but real estate goes down. And what I like to see is that we have a nice little pool of funds, so when real estate does head down a bit in Austin, that there are some opportunities that we can take advantage of. And one other thing, since you gave me an opportunity, Mr. Chair, two items, if we ever get to them this afternoon, that Ron and Suzanne Austin Affordable are bringing to us, is reducing the percent, and in both Center Ridge and Tetridge, and you all maybe remember back in 2015 when those two properties came to us, they're like 642 units, and when Ron sent me the information, I was like, oh, we can't buy those are too nice. Now, I was kind of kidding, but those properties have been very high-tech areas, they've been 100% occupied, and the distributions are important and basic. And so what we're doing with Community Development Trust is CDT wants to change their position. So we are going to use some money. We're going to use actually Freddie's money, I think. We're using Freddie's money, not our money, to take out to reduce CDT's position. But what it's going to do is increase cash flows on those two properties for us that we then put into this kind of repeatable, deliverable kind of resources for us. So, that's kind of what I think is the chair.
So you said something very important. Pardon me, Commissioner Duncan, let me just say this real quick. You said something very important. You said on terms of the Austin Affordable, there are about 13,000?
Yes.
Okay. 13,000, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes.
But then if you compare the number of RAD units we have, this program is actually larger than our RAD program or the form of public housing. In essence, Commissioner Bailey, we have more units through this program than we do in the old program.
That's still not my issue.
I said if you think about, so we call this RAD, but if this was just a regular public housing program, we've added more units through the Austin Affordable than we actually have there. I mean, we've improved these to make them, bring them up to standard, market standards, but we've actually expanded our portfolio through this.
And we have. Carlos, what you're telling me is I was wrong at the beginning.
No, I'm not telling you you were wrong.
I have come along. And
no, I'm
I
just
don't a, think other, you're not going to find too many no votes ever.
Yeah. No, but I was just making the point that, just amplifying the point that Commissioner Carrington was making, is that we have really done a good job in terms of expanding the number, and I agree with you, Commissioner Duncan Hall, in terms of even when we do that, we ought to try to find a way to expand that number with market rate properties. And I think two items we have on the agenda today will allow us to do that with existing properties.
I'll just close out then on my stuff.
And then after Joe.
My.
Okay.
And the only thing I wanted to piggyback on what Lynn said before we leave it is that the last couple meetings, or the last really 4 or 5 meetings, we have purchased properties that are closer to the 80% than we have the 60%. Which has given us a cash flow that's going to be higher and will give us that opportunity. And one thing I wanted to go back to is a comment that Ron made, saying that we haven't really done a good job of advertising these properties for the vouchers. And once we do that, and just to see where the gap is, I mean, I would be very curious with these last few purchases whether our people could get in with the voucher. And if they couldn't, where the gap is and how much of the gap there is. So that kind of investigation, I think, would help us a lot. And we see where we are.
I think there's a lot of pressure within the city now to really go and look at how many 80 units, how many 60 units, how many 30, 40, and 50 units. You know, we've tried to push it down as far as we can, and we've tried to aspire to kind of a mix, and our thought is not every 80, we haven't done many 80% deals, but we've done a few, and you've seen more recently.
Ones that were
We'll talk about that more fully as a staff team, and we'll come back to you all and keep this conversation going. I think those are very valid.
I think Commissioner... We are. I think Commissioner Carrington had one, and I do have another budget-related question, not on this topic, but it relates to insurance. Commissioner Carrington?
Since the two trails are going to come up,
can you cut on your mic?
Yes.
Thank you.
Deer Ridge and Decoration Center Ridge, thank you, Pathways, that we bought in 2015. I remember specifically, we put in, Hockup Austin Affordable put in how much did we put in a piece? We put in $2,500,000 a piece, so of our reserves, so that we could buy those properties. Each $2,500,000 on one, $2,500,000 on the other. And I would imagine somebody has numbers of what kind of return we have gotten. So Chuck, as we think about spending our money, at least as I think about spending our money, when I look at what Tech Ridge and Center Ridge have returned to us for a total of a $5 million investment, it's been multiples of that. And we created 642 units. I mean, the units were already there, but they have deed restrictions on them. And so these tenants are not going to get a $1,000 a month increase in their rent. So that's all I have to say, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I never did get closed.
All right. Barbara, you know, I think it wasn't last month, but maybe the month before. I mean, maybe I think it's either last month or in December. My senioritis is catching up with me, but we did improve paying the health insurance.
Yes.
And they did increase.
Mm-hmm.
Have you built in some room into this budget in anticipation of having to pay higher premiums for health and dental insurance for the employees? Because those numbers come to us at the end of the budget year, and I was just wondering, I didn't ask the question, but I just thought about it as I was going through this. They've come to us with the increases. We're already at the end of the budget year. Did we start paying them immediately? And if so, have you built in a possible figure to be able to pay for those if they come back and say we're going to have a 8% or a 12% increase?
Okay, to just let you know that we do. Before we got the data, the information from our insurance company, every year is in practice, every time I prepare a budget, no matter where I go, I use a 5% 5 to 7% range increase automatic built in. That's what normally in practice when you when I prepare the budget. So it just happened to be this year is coincide with what the increase. Right now is 5.2% increase. So I did about 5% increase from the last year number already. So it tied match to whatever we are paying. So that amount is yes, it's included in the employee benefit. It's not in the under the insurance. So you're not going to see that in insurance in this budget. It's a property insurance, it's a liability insurance, it's the directional officer insurance. The employee health insurance, dental insurance, those are considered employee benefit. So they are included in employee benefit. And yes, when I did the budget, and we actually this time, because I have not enough data, so I did use the 5.2% increase. But like, just let you know, every time when I prepare a budget, I automatically use 5 to 7% increase. So all depends. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, I appreciate that. And the most important thing you said is that you did plan for the officers and directors insurance.
Oh, we do have all the insurance.
Commissioners, just doing a quick time check. It's about 10 of 2, and I know we've been talking about the budget for a while. I know there's two items that I've had an opportunity to talk with commissioners about that staff would be very supportive of. One is from Commissioner Duncan Hall regarding literacy. Commissioner, did you want to highlight that?
Michael, I still haven't closed.
I'm sorry?
I haven't closed yet. You know, I was going to close and cross.
Sorry. I apologize. Ahead.
I closed.
On the literacy topic, Commissioner Duncan Hall, did you want to brief the commissioners, or did you want me to lay it out?
What is it that you want me to do?
Sure. Commissioner, yesterday we had an opportunity to visit for a few minutes, and you talked about the priority you placed on parent-child literacy and the opportunity to perhaps do something in that space at some of our properties. That's not currently factored in, and nor would we see it as something that would require a full-time.
So what I am asking that we do is perhaps amend the budget to include $100,000 for a special pilot program on parent-child literacy. That's the proposal. I would like to go into perhaps a little bit more detail, if I may, and I would like to have Ann come forward, if she would be so kind as to give me some assistance with this.
Yes, ma'am.
The answer to your question is yes. Yes, if you could, yes, you can go in more detail.
Yes, thank you. And we will be very quick with this. All of you know I care a great deal about literacy, and I care a very great deal about child literacy because I believe it is the key to children's success. And we all know that we have many parents who live on our properties who do not have the level of literacy where they can help themselves and help their children get out of this cycle that they're in. And the gap that many of our children experience in school is a direct result of the fact that their parents cannot read and do not read to their children, so that when they begin preschool and elementary school, they are really light years behind other children of the same age who come from different income backgrounds and different cultural and racial backgrounds. So having worked with these children and parents for a number of years in various capacities, I know how important it is to start very young with parents and children, helping each other, working with each other, and having a program which they can be guided to assist each other to learn these very crucial skills. We in Austin, of course, are challenged even more so in that many of the parents and children who live in our property English is not their first language. Many of the people who live in our properties have not completed high school. Many have not completed grade school. Many of them do not and cannot really assist their children in school work, as we found out in the last 2 years when they weren't able to go to school and they weren't able really to assist their children when they had to do the work at home, especially with computers, because number one, they couldn't read, and number two, they didn't have the facility to work with these programs. And so they fell even further and further behind. And that is going to hurt them the rest of their lives. And so I think it would behoove us above all else to do what we can do to help these children. So what I'm interested in doing is starting some kind of pilot program where we can work with parents who, number one, have where English is not their first language, and that we can gather some parents and students who are in pre-elementary. So I don't know, we're saying starting with 3 to 5 year old, that age group, and also to make sure that we include African-American in that group too, because many of them have the same problem. You will find parents who have never read to their children, and mainly because they can't. You will find children who have never tried to read aloud because they can't. And if we cannot get the parents to read to the children and the children to read to the parents, we're going to have this gap continue and grow and grow. And so I was talking to Ann about this, and she already knows about all this. And I'm not going to say she's already an expert, but she has resources that I didn't know about. So I'm going to ask her to please quickly tell you some of the things that she knows about.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Ann Gass. I had the honor of serving on the board of an Austin nonprofit called BookSpring. I've been off the board for about 3 years now, but when Mr. Gerber mentioned this to me this morning, I immediately thought of one of the services that BookSpring provides, which is called Parent Book Club. Now, the Housing Authority has partnered with BookSpring in the past. That little library we used to have out in the lobby was provided by BookSpring, and we also did some summer programming there. But we never had explored the Parent Book Club. And so what the Parent Book Club did is it worked to engage parents reading from birth and teaching parents the importance of reading, giving them tools how to read to their kids. So I called the executive director and I mentioned, you know, are you guys doing the book club? How's it going? And she said, would you believe we have just hired a brand new bilingual FTE to breathe life back into our parent book club. They had always had a part-time person, but never a full-time. And they have developed a program called Books Beginning at Birth, which they're calling B3. And it works specifically with parents. And what she said was, which I thought was great, it focuses on changing caregiver behavior towards literacy. It teaches them. One of the things that struck me about it was she said that oftentimes parents who don't speak English are hesitant to read to their children because they can't read English. They don't want to teach their children their native language because they think they should learn English. And clearly that's not what we want. We want them to be reading to them whatever language they can read in, and we want to encourage that literacy. So teaching parents to read in whatever language they speak, teaching them to go to the library. We do a field trip to a library. We get everybody a library card. So this sounded right up our alley as to what Commissioner Duncan Hall was talking about. I asked her if she thought that $100,000 for a pilot program would be sufficient, thinking about maybe starting at 4 properties. And they do, as Commissioner Duncan Hall and I discussed, have a particular focus on bilingual and culturally diverse books. That's something they've been working on very hard in the past 5 years or so. So again, it sounded tailor-made. And the executive director said that with this addition of this new FTE, she absolutely thought they would have the bandwidth to ramp up a program pretty quickly. The program they're working on actually starts from birth to four, but she said they could move it up all the way through kinder mm-hmm. fairly easily if that's what we wanted to do.
So yeah, because you know, all of you probably shop at HEB. I go to HEB and they have a little section of books for children. And many of those books are bilingual. One page English, the other page Spanish. The books cost $1. $1. So I usually pick up 5, 10, give them to the schools, and sometimes I go read, arrange that. But we can do this. I mean, the resources are not that expensive a lot of times. But we need to figure out what components are necessary, what components are useful and enriching and things of that sort. So this would be a pilot, and we would need to determine just what steps and et cetera, and how to get the parents involved and what point we start bringing in computer usage and things of that sort. But I think we could work up something very nicely and have something to really report back within a year.
I think so. You know, one thing I should also mention, I spoke with Leilani Lim-Viegas about this as well, and she was very supportive. She mentioned at the Austin Public Library that they have a computer checkout program. Mm-hmm. So this could leap from book literacy into computer literacy, you know, mm-hmm. fairly easily. Also, some of this is adult literacy. Right, and so BookSpring focuses very specifically on children's literacy, and they are really two different disciplines. But BookSpring partners with the Austin Literacy Coalition for when they have to refer someone for adult literacy. So if we did come across that, they would just bridge that, make that bridge for us.
So I think we'd like to bring this program back more fully to the board, maybe have some specific discussions between the couple of commissioners particularly interested in the space. But I think we're proposing today is what Commissioner Duncan Hall's amendment does is adds it would add $100,000, which we would take from the unrestricted reserve, and we would use that to build a program along the lines of what we've talked about to address parent-child literacy.
Right.
And with the intent of looking to partners like BookSpring and the Literacy Council and others that provide services. And we're excited to be already in partnership with BookSpring. And it'll, again, staff sort of did this on the fly over the last, you know, several hours. So let them have a little chance, like see Leilani behind the mask back there, and give a chance to work on it. But for the amendments purposes, is that consistent with what you were suggesting?
Yes. Yes. I think we could maybe have a planning meeting before the next board meeting.
So let me just throw this out. Chuck and I have a mutual friend by the name of Dave McNeely. And Dave is part of, for those who don't know him, he's a journalist. He is involved in a program where he and other volunteers, and I'm not sure what the name of the group is, but they go to Zavala Elementary School and they do reading and they get people to come read to those classes. And I remember him calling me because something was taking place, I think, it was something going on with Zavala in one of the other schools and one of our properties, and that's why he reached out to me. It would be good to try to get them involved as well because, again, their focus is about reading. And I know there are, again, two different components. One is to the child and the other one is to the adult. And to the extent that you can get the adult trained, it helps them so they can train the child. So I just throw that out there to you. The other thing I was thinking about is with HEB, they are a very generous community partner. And so Austin Pathways may want to reach out to them about once this program takes off to get them to donate books into the program. I think they'd be willing to do that. And then going back to the earlier program, when the lady was the head of the Citywide Advisory Council, I do remember that years ago there was a program similar, that was analogous to it. Mm-hmm. And we gave this particular mother some money because she started a homework club. Mm-hmm. And from that is what we kind of built out to do the scholarship program. I remember she came to the board asking for $50 so she could buy passes to SeaWorld because she had her son and his friends come to her house mm-hmm. after school and do their homework. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what we can do with their program in terms of, since HEB will only give to nonprofits, and I guess we're trying to get those Ross grants and stuff, but maybe that's something else that we look at to help kind of get that jump started, and maybe we get HEB to donate the food to us, and then we can turn around and work out some sort of situation with her and her program to get them money, because HEB gives a lot of money, a lot of food to the food banks around the state. So that's something else. I mean, that didn't cost us money, but that's something I'd like for us to think about, how we help her put more support behind her program. But I do think this program is a worthwhile venture. I just think there are a lot of people who would be happy to help out with an adult literacy program, especially in terms of, because what everything we're hearing is this COVID slide. Mm-hmm. You know, these kids need some kind of way to enhance their reading, because once you read, you can do math, and you can write, and you can do so many other things.
It's the key to everything.
Yeah. So I'm supportive of this. So I'm recognizing you for a motion. You need a second.
Okay.
This is a motion by Commissioner Duncan Hall, seconded by Commissioner Carrington, to amend the budget to appropriate $100,000
for a pilot program
dealing with adult and child literacy.
Yes.
Any further discussion? Commissioner Apostola.
Yes.
You may want to vote on this item first and then come to your item.
Okay.
Well, no, I mean, you had a question, so this is for discussion.
No, I also have an amendment to
the
question.
Okay.
I also
say it again because I couldn't hear you.
I also have an amendment that I would like to present, to propose to the budget.
Oh, okay, but it's not an amendment to her amendment? Separate item?
Separate.
Okay. So any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. And I guess you will be chair of the committee to work with the staff to develop this program.
I will be delighted to do so.
All right.
Exciting stuff. Thank you.
Commissioner Apostolo.
Yes, I'd also like to make an amendment to the budget to propose a budget of $5,000 for the iMoms support to match any local sponsors.
Okay.
And maybe we can get together, because we have a lot of grandmothers in that.
Oh, yes.
Yes, lots of great grandmothers and grandmothers. And somehow we can collaborate.
That's determining components of the program, mm-hmm. and that certainly could be a component.
So I like the idea. Is there a cap, though? So to match $5,000 per. So let's say HEB comes and they're going to give $5,000. Frost agrees to match, so donate $5,000. So we're matching that. Is there a cap?
Ms. Sharon, I think maybe the way I heard it was you were talking about up to $5,000 to support the program.
Yes.
But a portion of that, as the program needs, could be used for match. So if it turns out that $2,000 would match $2,000 from HEB, that's great. But at the end of the day, what HACA would be contributing to iMoms would be $5,000 to get that program up and running, a portion of which could be used for match, to be determined based on what the needs are.
Is $5,000 a maximum for the year? For 1 year?
For 1 year, because it's a building program, I think, Commissioner. Leilani, we think that with iMoms and iDads, we're doing things, iDads has generated some money through some other sources. iMoms is just starting to take shape. So we think this is good seed money with an eye towards maybe next year coming with
it. iDad has some budget,
so
isn't it?
So, Commissioner, I support you, but I just wondered $5,000 is enough because that's a very small amount of money.
What's happening right now is because of the new iMoms, so iDads does have some funding that they don't use every year that they're willing to share with iMoms. So it's not really at zero, okay, is what I'm trying to say. So there is some funding that can be, if there is some kind of events or collaboration with iDads and iMoms, but we're not there yet. So there are some funding. So I think the $5,000 would be more like a supplemental as opposed to the only, the only balance you have for, for any of the items that are needed for the meetings. There are costs that are incurred. Food is an attraction, so they always have to have money or donations for food, right?
If you feed them, they will come.
Correct. So yeah, that's probably the largest cost is maybe just the food itself.
Mostly what I have found out, in the short time, we've only had two meetings, is that it's not the food. They just want to network. Women want to talk to us, older, experienced women, about little kids or this or that. And I used to have a daycare center for 20 years. So, we can share. I even had a lady who doesn't go out. Mm-hmm. She's a recluse. And I had her come over, and she sat right next to me, almost on my lap. But nonetheless, she got out. And she was impressed with it. And she even told me, I'm big and I'm not that good looking. People are watching. I said, no, they're not. None of us. Do you see a size 10 in here? None of us are here for a swimsuit competition. Mm-hmm. We're here to share. And if you have that, that you're worried about your self-esteem, most all of us do. But I just wanted to make her aware that it's a common thing. All women share that. We all go through these things, so I was just happy that she came out, and she's anxious to go to the next meeting.
So that's what I mean
about networking, too, to bring people and maybe their problems, share it with somebody else that you're comfortable with, and we'll help you get through it.
And they were asking as well, they have an iDads, this idea came about by some women.
For the sake of gender equity, I would support funding for iMoms, and I would support Mary's resolution for a max of $5,000 for the fiscal year to support activities of iMoms for various gatherings and networking activities, including food, etc.
I'll second the motion.
Well, Mary made the motion, and I'm seconding her motion.
Oh, I thought you were amending her motion.
So it's a motion made by Commissioner Apostolo, seconded by Commissioner Duncan Hall. Discussion.
Public comment.
And public comment. I guess the only question...
Well, you might say that gender equity was simply a P.S. postscript.
It was kind of an amendment to her amendment.
Okay. And there's an amendment...
Well, as an amendment to her amendment, that's true. Would you accept my amendment about for gender equity, et cetera? I'm supporting yours.
All right. So that's been an amendment. I do have a question in terms of the iMoms program, and that is, how is it being advertised so that others...
The web, Facebook, Key West, and some of her sponsors, LULAC, Los Comadres, it just goes on and on. So when we met for the first time last Tuesday, there were 26 of us, but we kept getting phone calls. People were calling from Pflugerville, women, Round Rock, they want to join. So they heard about it through, Facebook, through the internet. So
is it limited to Hawker residents, or is it open?
I'm talking about 5,000. I think the initial, a lot of it was of course, Lupe has a lot of connections with the Women's Conference that she hosts year after year, so it started with that group of people. But right now for the IDADs, it's not just limited to PBRA residents. If a child, for example, lives in PBRA, but the father figure lives in Section 8 or somewhere else, but that is the father figure of that child, we still welcome that gentleman to come to IDADs. It's the same philosophy that would fall with IMOMs is, let's say the child lives with a father in a PBRA property, but the mother lives in a home somewhere else because it's the mother figure of the child servicing one of our HACA residents, that they too are also welcome to attend IMOMs.
That's right. However, I think it might be wise to, in order to keep some kind of handle on this, is that there be a coordinator from the Housing Authority. For example, you know, I know that the founder of Comadres used to be a Rotarian with me, and I'm sure she's still very active in the national organization. So it could get all kinds of tentacles, but if we're saying we're providing funding, then there should be at least a coordinator from this end.
There will be. We certainly will have some support and oversight. It won't be as intense because it's exciting. It's a resident-led initiative, which is great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll probably have a team member who will work with a committee of residents to work to make this happen. Mm-hmm. And thanks to Commissioner Obstolo and to Lupe. I wish Lupe was still here. But I think those are the best kind of initiatives when residents feel empowered. And to work this kind of initiative through the Citywide Advisory Board could also be empowering. And, of course, they're also working on a conference for women, mm-hmm. which is also empowering. So we're excited about all of that. So there's a lot happening in the in the space of trying to empower our residents, particularly women residents.
Brandy Pitts is a full-time employee, and she services Santa Rita, Rosewood, and Salinas. So we already have a coordinator, if you think about somebody in place that's assisting her with all of the events. And, of course, Murphy Rowland right now stepped in because he's handling the IDAD. So there's already at least two people, and, of course, I'm always supervising the program.
Sounds good. Yeah, I was going to say that Murphy Rowland from the IDAD is assisting Lupa, too. So we're getting And I think IDADs could get some wider exposure here mm-hmm. as well. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So just because I think part of what you asked me to do is also be the time to help keep track of time. Some of you have been sitting here for almost 4 hours, so I just want to be mindful of that. I know. So I think what did you do a vote already on that?
No, we have not. There was a friendly amendment that was accepted by the maker of the motion, and so now we're ready to vote on the motion as amended. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
So with the board's permission, we'll go back to the underlying to the overarching resolution, which is number 2742. Number 2743. The operating budget for fiscal year April 1st, 2022 to March 31st, 2023, as amended to include an additional $105,000 in revenue to be taken from unrestricted reserves for purposes of parent child literacy and for the IMOMS program at the amounts stated in the resolution. We've asked for board approval of our budget.
So moved.
Motion made by Commissioner Apostolo, seconded by Commissioner Duncan Hall. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, we now turn to the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation agenda and to Chairwoman Carrington.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. The meeting has been opened. Quorum has been established. And do we need to ask for public communication?
No.
Or have we already done that?
We've already done that for the first one, but for each of the items, you'll need to ask for comments from the public.
Okay. So any public comment on the first item for Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, which is item number three, I think? Mr. Kowal will present this, and this is asking the Board of Austin Affordable Housing Corporation to authorize any and all documents to cause AAHC Subsidiary Limited Liability Corporation to obtain supplemental financing for the Center Ridge Apartments, which we talked about a little earlier, and to execute any further documentation that may be necessary to accomplish this supplemental financing. So it is item number 3 in the book under Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. And Mr. Kowal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just clarification, did we do consent on AAHC when we were doing all the deals?
We haven't yet.
Okay. So
we'll go back and catch it at the end.
I just wanted to make sure we don't forget, because I don't think we
ratified
it. I couldn't remember we did all those corporations.
I didn't remember it.
Good.
Somebody's keeping track.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioners, staff. So you got a little bit of a preview earlier in discussion on what we're asking you to do here, and I think if you all remember back in November, you all approved for us to purchase the property called the Bridge at Riblin Ranch with our partners, Community Development Trust, CDT. Our plan all along, which is a great group of people to work with in CDT, was to close this transaction and then replace the equity that CDT used with equity from that we have earned over the course of 6-7 years over at Tech Ridge and Center Ridge, and those that replacement equity then would then take the existing equity and put it back into a fund that we could use for further properties down the road should something come up. It also gave us the opportunity to take a much larger position in the property stake itself. I think CDT's philosophy is one to never borrow money from a property just to put money in your pocket. It has to have some purpose to it, and going into creating new affordable units, which is what we were doing and which we are doing now at Riblin Ranch. And it also, we never borrow more than what we took out, so we never overtake what we need. This is just exactly replacing pretty much dollar for dollar what the equity was when we all closed on Riblin Ranch that was provided to us by CDT. So resolutions 5 and 6, is it 3 and 4? 3 and 4, they're two separate resolutions that will be coming, action items 3 and 4. Because the properties have two separate notes, they each have their own standalone loan documents. We're taking supplemental loans on each one. And item number 3, which is resolution 00200, is for the Center Ridge, which is to for you all to approve a supplemental loan in the dollar amount now to exceed $15 million. That money then will then be used to turn around and go ahead and replace the equity that's been used in Riblin Ranch. The term on this will be a 3.5-year term, which will match the existing permanent loan that's in place now. So that'll be a step side-by-side loan. So when they both come up for renewal at that time in the next 3.5 years, we'll be dealing with both of those again sometime down the road. I just want to let you know, Tech Ridge and Center Ridge both have been tremendous properties for us. They do very, very well. We've got a very, very strong affordable component there, which I'll be sharing with you in very short time. Maybe at the next board meeting, you'll see some more detail to answer some of the questions you proposed earlier. That's basically the gist of it. The good news is this will also increase and give us the opportunity to bring in roughly about an additional $500,000 to $525,000 more of annual income, which, by the way, is not budgeted in the 22-23 year, so because we haven't approved it, so it's not. So this will be a supplemental somewhere down the road if you were to go ahead and approve this. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Kowal? I think it's important to mention that as Ron talks about the $15 million, this is actually coming through a loan through Freddie Mac.
Yes, that's correct.
We're not coming out of pocket for this.
That's correct.
We're getting a loan. We are obtaining a loan from Freddie Mac at, what, about 3.5? What was the interest rate? 4.5?
It's about 4. Well, we haven't been able to lock the rate because we haven't approved this, so we'll go out there tomorrow, and we actually get a little favorable drop in the 10 years in the last 2 days, so maybe we'll get a little bit, but we'll be somewhere in the 4 range, 4.0 something. The existing note right now is 4.09, just so you know, that's what our perm loan debt was. And then between the two properties, the outstanding debt on this is about $43 million, so we'll be adding another 25 total to both properties to bring it back up to about $68 million in debt. And that'll put us at about, without roughly about 40% leveraged loan to value on the value of the assets together.
Ron, what's, Madam Chair, Ron, what is the, why are we doing this?
So the reason we're doing it is CDT offered us the ability to be a participant into the Riblin Ranch. And so we don't have to use our own equity. We're able to take the equity that we've earned over the course of the years out of these two properties and then take that and use it, you know, to give us a 20. We'll, it'll be an 80-20%. They'll own 80%, we'll own 20% based on the percentage of the ownership in Tech Ridge and Center Ridge, so it'll be equal. Just as, so 20% of the money of the $25 million will be AHC's and 80% will be CDT's, and it'll be replacing their $24 million, which will then go back into the pot for future deals.
Okay.
And this will give us a larger stake and obviously more participation and, like I said, an additional nice little chunk of cash.
Any other questions or comments for Mr. Kowal? Okay, if not, do I hear a motion then to approve Resolution 00200? Mary makes the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Chuck makes a second. Any other discussion?
Any public comment?
I'm sorry?
You asked about public comment.
Oh, I thought I did that, but okay. Is there any more public comment?
You don't really need to do that, but that's okay.
I think I did it at the beginning, but aren't we all losing track? Okay, so all those in favor of approving Resolution 002-002, perform the activities outlined by Mr. Kowal for Center Ridge.
Aye.
Aye.
In favor, aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, then the motion carries. Okay, so then item number four for Austin Affordable Housing Corporation is Resolution 00201, and this is for the Tech Ridge development, which these two are side by side. This is the 642 units, and basically what we're asking for with this one is the same kind of action. It would cause AAHC to obtain supplemental financing for the development, and also to cause AAHC and the owner to execute any and all documents that are necessary to carry out the transaction.
And this will be with a not to exceed $10 million.
Okay, Mr. Kowal. Oh, I think we already have it.
Again, same props, same principles, same thing again. Not to exceed $10 million. And
so move.
Okay, Carl makes the motion. Is there a second? Mary seconds. Any more discussion? Any public comment? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, hearing none. Motion passes for approved Resolution 00201. And then the last item for Austin Affordable Housing Corporation relates to the Lucent Apartments. And this is Resolution 00202. Ron, do you want to go through this for us?
Thank you again, Madam Chair. I was just reading this. You know, I've been here for this long. I think I'm responsible for 202 AHC resolutions. I started thinking, dang, that's a lot of resolutions. Because we started AHC when I came forward in 2003.
Excuse me just a minute.
And I went,
excuse me?
Yes, ma'am.
Is there any public comment?
not to my 202 resolutions, please. I always often wondered what caused the hole in my head, and now I know it's 202 resolutions.
You have a little punchy here.
Thank you, Commissioners, again. So briefly, if in December of 2021, you all approved the purchase of the Lucent apartments. You may remember this one is off of Palmer Lane and Dessau Road, very close to Tech Ridge and Center, just a little further east, just on the other side of the road from Harris Branch Senior, which we own as well. This was a brand new property built by NRP. We went through a bid process, and we were able to win that with our partners at Belveron Corporation. The property at that time was in temporary certificates of occupancy, and so Fannie Freddie's affordable financing is not available until you have permanent or final certificates of occupancy. So we closed on a bridge loan, which you all approved, with the understanding that we would come back to you to get approval on the perm loan. So it's basically, it was a two-step process. We stayed in the bridge loan until we received all our final certificates of occupancy, met all of the city requirements, took care of all necessary outstanding repair items, final punch list items. We withheld over $2 million from NRP to handle any issues that may have arisen, plus they were responsible for fixing any other repairs that came up. Everything went extremely smooth, I will say. NRP built a beautiful product. So we're very pleased that we got this off so early. I actually didn't think it was going to happen in March. I was thinking it would be more April, but we're fortunate. And time is of the essence here, as we've seen interest rates tick up higher and higher and higher. So we are now ready to roll into that perm loan. This will be a Freddie product. And I think on your summary, I've kind of listed that we'll be doing a loan of approximately $86 million. The purchase price on this at the time was $105,350,000. The rate's going to be, we had a temporary lock at 3.4%, so we were able to lock in and at a very good rate right before rates kind of spiked up. So our commitment will be expiring soon, so therefore the perm rate is good timing for us. And like I said, this just locks us into the perm loan financing, and it'll be a 30-year loan with Freddie and with a 10-year rate, and we're ready to go. So we're very pleased with the process of getting through temporary COs. The property is 100% occupied, and we are in the process now, just to share with you, of going through the process of discounting tremendously to get to that affordable level, at least at 80%, and looking at some units at 60. So our partners at Belveron are very committed to making that happen. So as leases turn and new leases come in, those are nobody but affordable units are being rented at this point. And as we continue to go forward, we'll keep reassessing to see how deep affordable we can go past beyond just what the state recommends at 50% of leads at 80%. So it's been a tremendous property. I can't wait for y'all to see it sometime, too, when we get out there and take a tour of this, because it is a beautiful asset. I think you'd be very proud of it. So with that, I'll answer questions if you have any. But this is kind of a standard thing. We always want to be in a perm financing. You don't want to be in a bridge financing because it's short term and it's more expensive. So,
Tara, question?
Yeah. Well, $1,400 for a one bedroom. Mm-hmm. Pretty expensive. Mm-hmm. But it seems like the square foot is rather large.
They are bigger units. But, we'll be targeting that rental range probably in around the $1,249 average on the 80s. And then if we hit some 60s, we'll probably be in the 1169, something like that, on the one bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Chuck?
I know we talked about this last time, the last two or three properties brought to us.
just astounded me about the price. And this is $105 million. When we started doing this, we were talking $5 million, $8 million, $15 million. Mm-hmm. Have those properties that we bought back then, have they appreciated to this level?
Yes, they have now. Some of our older assets aren't going to command $280,000 a door, but you know, when you think about a property like Sterling Village, which was one of the first properties we bought back in 2004, we paid $42,000 a unit for it, and I think the current appraisal is somewhere around $175 a door. So, and we own those 100%, and so we have five properties in our portfolio that AHC/the Housing Authority owns 100%. All those were bought in those first few years that we were here. Mm-hmm. So the equity buildup in those five are just absolutely astronomical. But next month, I think, I don't know if I'm scheduled, I think next month I'm coming to talk to you about AHC, possibly.
I believe so. Then we're going to try to do a pre-meeting that's going to be focused on programs, and we'll cover.
But I also am going to cover some of the AHC. Some of the unit mixes in the AMIs, and so you can see exactly where this portfolio, as it sits, is where it is positioned today, and you can see some of the trends. So we got a nice little presentation that we're going to share for you and answer those questions. But to answer your question, yes, tremendously. It will get 15 calls a day from people trying to buy anything we own as fast as we own it. So
it's unbelievable. I mean, and some of those calls, the overflow of calls that go to Suzanne that I get. I mean, literally every come in on into the office, and there'll be three calls on the phone from different brokers around the country. Would you even consider selling any of your assets? I mean, it is a feeding frenzy.
It is a feeding frenzy.
And I'm excited that Ron's going to be able to speak with you all next month, and we'll block out that time because I want you all to be excited about this portfolio. I mean, it really is it really is remarkable among housing authorities around the country. And it's really meeting a set of needs that, Lisa's program would be in a ton of hurt if we were not able to have this resource.
Well, and we hope to achieve better. We have hope to do better, and that's one of the goals we're committed to. I know the management company's committed to. We've had lengthy discussions, and I'm looking forward to working with Lisa's group. And Suzanne does a tremendous job on all our new construction. I would say 85% of those units. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Are you doing the new construction side maybe? But most of her portfolio is 100% servicing that 60% and below AMI. So anyway, we're excited to show you some things next month.
Well, I'd like to
make a comment, Mr. Chair. When I first got on this board, which was 2005. Is that right?
Yeah. When you first got on the board?
Uh huh. 2005, I think it was. I didn't even know we had a portfolio. We didn't even use the word portfolio. Seriously.
Yeah, we did get a shopping.
There you go.
And we had a few properties, but no one used the word portfolio. The first time I heard the word portfolio in relation to housing properties, public housing, was when I went to my first conference. And I went on a tour, because I like to do that, and this person who was giving us this bus tour, their properties, and they said, well, our portfolio consists of, and I said, what? My portfolio?
Well, the truth of that.
I said, how pretentious.
That's right. I mean, you talk about it at conferences, and you talk about your portfolio. We talk about portfolio here in the board meeting. Everywhere else in the building and in the HACA universe, we talk, it's people. We talk about our residents and our families, and we need to probably do a stronger job of bringing that in here. But so many of the decisions you all make are the acquisition or purchasing of real estate, real property, and so we talk about the portfolio. You see charts about that. But at the end of the day, it's all about people. It's all about people. That's where the job satisfaction is. It's why Ron and Suzanne run around the properties all week, every week. It's why the pandemic has limited our ability to share with you those pieces. We actually thought about trying to take you all to a property this go around. We were thinking about maybe trying to do something at Goodrich. It didn't work out. But we're going to look for other opportunities, because it's the people part of it that I know you all most care about, and that we do too. And we want to leverage the property, we want to leverage the partnerships, but it's all, again, to the benefit of people. I would suggest voting, Madam Chair, on item number 2.
I want to say one more thing.
Yes, ma'am.
And it goes to Mr. Bailey's question of value of our properties. We have owned Center Ridge and Tech Ridge for 7 years. I've forgotten how much we paid for it. How much did you share with me? What is the valuation now of those two properties? You shared that with me a couple of days ago.
We bought it for $68 million, which is now where we'll be re-leveraged at $68 million. And the appraisal that came out was $160 million on the asset that was doing this refinance.
No, I'm no longer a new dealer. I'm just a pure cat.
That's it. You know, I think the question really is, since the Austin market is just so hot and frothy, is it really worth are they really worth $160 million?
I could sell it for probably more than that, actually.
I don't want to, yeah.
But obviously that's great to know, and then it gives us some comfort. And you know, real estate's only worth what it's on paper, because tomorrow it could change tomorrow and I could be back and telling you it's worth $72 million again, right? So but fortunately right now. And I think that's one of the things I shared. Barbara's not here, but you know, if we're ever in a crisis, I think we have the ability to do some really quick things that could generate some, you know, emergency dollars or emergency cash flows just based on the real estate that we've acquired, owned, and managed all these years. Mm-hmm. It's given, just like you saw, we did with Eastland to take care of our RAD portfolio at the last minute, and so you know, we have the ability to turn, you know, some quick dollars if we needed to, whether that's the shopping center, whether it's this building, whether it's an asset that we own, that we can always do the things we're doing here. So I think we're in pretty good shape on the equity side.
We may need to sell a property just to cover Bill and Wilson's legal fees.
But we can do that if we need to. Okay, I'd like to call for a vote to approve resolution 00202 for the financing, execute all documents.
So move.
Okay. Carl?
Second.
Carl motions. Tyra, second. Any further discussion? If none, then all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
Thank you.
Then Mr. Gerber, you said we needed to go back to the beginning of Austin Affordable's meeting.
Yes, ma'am, to the consent items.
Okay. And those are on item number 2. Is that correct?
Items 1 and 2.
Item number 1. Okay.
So we'll handle consent agenda.
So the consent items for the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. Do I hear a motion to approve them?
So moved.
Carl makes a motion. Mary second. Any discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you. With that, the meeting of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation is closed at 2:40.
Don't you have to vote?
Okay. Do I hear a motion that we close the meeting of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation?
So moved.
Thank you. And second, all in favor?
Aye.
At 2:40 on March the 24th. Thank you all. Thanks, Ron and Suzanne. Appreciate your work.
So, Commissioners, we go back to the HACA agenda. We go to item 5 and 6 and 7, which are the same, 5 and 6, which are the same items you just approved under the Austin Affordable Resolution. Item number 5 is Resolution 2744 by the Board of Commissioners of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin to take the following actions with regard to Center Ridge Apartments in Austin, Texas. 1, facilitate the supplemental financing, and 2, such other actions as necessary or convenient to carry out this resolution. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Commissioner Apostolo moved. Who seconded?
Second.
Commissioner Carrington. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? The ayes have it. Mr. Bailey was not, is off the...
Yes, he has to be shown voting aye.
Mr. Bailey shown as voting aye. We may move to item number 6, which is presentation discussion on resolution number 2745 of the Board of Commissioners of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin to take the following actions with regard to Tech Ridge Apartments in Austin, Texas. One, facilitate the supplemental financing, and two, such other actions as necessary or convenient to carry out this resolution. Is there a motion to approve this item?
Chairman.
Commissioner Carrington moves to approve. It's seconded by Commissioner Duncan Hall. Is there any public comment on this item? Seeing none, is there any further discussion on this item? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Passes unanimously. We then move on to executive session. There's no need for an executive session. We then move on to reports. The President's report. I've got two bits of good news. One is I wanted to share with you all that we are going to have the groundbreaking for the Chalmers East healthcare clinics. So these are the buildings that are, I'll show you on the charts that we have here. As you know, with the redevelopment of the Chalmers complex, part of this included the Business Chalmers South, where we did the groundbreaking, that there was a dedication. This is Chalmers East that you did the groundbreaking for. Chalmers East has now been built and it's been occupied. Over here, we talked about having these two original buildings preserved, and we're using them for a healthcare clinic in partnership with Community Care and with Central Health. They're going to do a groundbreaking for that new healthcare clinic, and we think it'll be operational in about 6 months. That's going to be held on April 4th.
Is this the old executive building?
This is where the old executive building is, yeah. And Chalmers West is under construction. Right, Mary?
Yes, sir.
Right out our window.
Out our window every day, all day long.
So we'd love to have as many of you come. We're a little out of control of the event. It was really Community Care needed to schedule it on their schedule. So it's Monday, April 4th at, I believe, 10 o'clock. But we'll send you, in fact, Nitty, can you confirm that before they leave? But we'll send you information. It just got confirmed yesterday. But we need to do it for them to start construction. I think Community Care is having a bit of a challenging time right now with Central Health, and so they'd like to show progress on their 9:30. So we're doing it through Community Care, which is they'll operate the clinic.
Is that
Gieselin's
group?
No, Gieselin's is Community is Central Health.
It's part of it. So think in terms of when the hospital district got created, the city and the county both had separate health clinics. The clinics got transferred to the district. And so, like, Central Health is kind of the parent company. The clinics are what they call Community Care. So you got the clinic, then you got Sendero, which is the health insurance. So okay. So they have their own director, but that person reports up to Gieselin.
And so we'd love to have you all join us on the 4th. And we'll send that details to you about that.
At 9:30?
Yes, ma'am, 9:30.
Yeah.
I would love to be there, but unfortunately I am not. I'll be out of the country.
And so
where will you be out of the country?
Using tickets to Southwest Airlines that must be used by April 31st or they won't be valid anymore.
Did you say the destination or did I miss it?
It's just out of the country.
Out of the country.
But if you should speak, I would ask you to actually, I won't be there. I'll be on the other coast. But if you speak by chance, just give my heartfelt thanks to them for that clinic. Is something that's been a vision of mine for a very long, ever since I've been on this board.
Uh-huh.
Yep. We will definitely.
And will we say that your daughters has made you go?
No, I would say that my spouse made me go. Now that she gave me notice these tickets have to be used, and given that I have bounced around the country on narrow business and she has been stuck at home, she is determined to leave and get out and go do something different.
That sounds as close to an ultimatum as I've heard.
It is.
So the second thing I want to suggest to you, by way of report, is, you know, it's been a while since we have done any kind of sort of strategic thinking, planning, and such. And so I'd like to, not April, but maybe June or July, maybe think about maybe one of our board meetings being a strategic planning retreat. Maybe take a couple hours and just maybe walk through the direction we're headed and just to, you know, reconnect on some of those priorities. So think about what might work best for you, and as I call you throughout the, you know, this inter-meeting period, I'll check in with you to see what might work best. But would love to, you know, get some guidance from you all and have an opportunity for the staff, now that it's safe for us to be together, to, you know, to reconnect and have an opportunity to more fully pull together. In that vein, I'd love to invite you all at the next board meeting, which is April 21st, maybe we want to push the board meeting back a little bit, but if you all would be interested and want to stick with us a little bit longer, we could start at noon, and then it could end with maybe going to a happy hour or something like that with the executive team, and we'll even drag Wilson along. But maybe we could do something like that. If it's been a while since we've all been together, and with it being safe to be together. And I'd love to come to your apartment. We host it on Mary's balcony.
But Mary's opening up her apartment again?
But, well, maybe we'll go to like Eastside Tavern or something like that. But if folks were open to that, it'd be nice to maybe be, it's been a long time since we've been able to be together. You know, think about that. Well, I'll touch base with each of you. And what do you all, any initial reaction? That sounds terrible.
Mm-hmm. It's fine.
Yes? Okay.
But I'll tell you, July, I'm leaving.
Good.
It's cold. Got to get out of the heat.
So we'll look at the April board meeting afterwards. Do you want to shift the meeting back just a little bit so that we're...
Like 2 o'clock?
Maybe start at rather than starting at noon, maybe starting at 2.
Yeah.
And then we could ease that into a happy hour.
Sounds good.
Would that be okay?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll do the next board meeting at 2 o'clock. Now, we still have that pre-meeting that we were talking about where Ron was going to brief, but I think we can probably get it all done at that, from 2 to... I think,
well,
2 to
if you give us an incentive, we will be more efficient and succinct in our comments.
What do we have at the community center at East?
Oh, that's a great idea. Let's do it at Chalmers. Why don't we plan our next board meeting at Chalmers Courts, and then we'll be able to walk right down to Eastside Tavern right there. Does that sound like a good plan?
Yeah, okay. Sure.
You know, if we do it at 12 noon, if we do it at 1.
Do what at 1?
I'm thinking our board meetings are going for about 3 hours. Isn't that about right? Mm-hmm. So if we meet at 1 instead of 12, we'll be done by 4, and then we'll truly be in that happy hour sweet spot. Does that sound good?
Okay.
And that way we don't stay too late so people can get home and have to fight, you know, mm-hmm. Hopefully rush hour traffic's not too horrific. Okay, so the next board meeting, Nydia, is going to start at 1 o'clock instead of at noon, and so we won't offer lunch, but it'll flow in. We'll do it at Chalmers Courts, and it'll flow into a happy hour over at Eastside Tavern. We won't put that in the minutes.
Okay, and we're going to meet in what, the community room, or
we will. Yeah, we'll probably do it. I'm not sure. We'll either do it in Chalmers East, where we've done it before. I'm sorry, in Chalmers South, where we've done it before. Then we'll do it in Chalmers. We'll do it in the new Chalmers. So Chalmers East. I'll send you detailed instructions as to where it is.
Yeah.
Beautiful rooms. You'll like it a lot.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Ron related to our business, but related to housing business. I heard, as many of you all did, that Austin Habitat for Humanity received a grant of $8.5 million.
Oh, did they?
It's the largest grant they've ever received. And I think it's the largest grant that
Mackenzie's got.
The Habitat National has received.
I think it was like a $300 million grant to be spread
to the national. And then we got, or our Habitat, I think.
which is great. And Phyllis Snodgrass, who used to work for the chamber, heads up Austin Habitat. She's done a great job there. She's leaving. She's retiring from Austin Habitat. Her name is Phyllis Snodgrass. She used to be at the chamber.
And she was, before she was doing that, what was she doing? I can't remember. In her previous life, what did she do?
Well, she was at the chamber before Habitat. And that's, I don't know where she was before that.
Oh, and then she was before that, before she was...
But she's been around a number of years and done really fine work.
I can't remember,
Sure.
Not really. I
want to
hear it again.
Sure, I think I've shared with each of you.
I want it to be reinforced.
I'm very pleased, and I think I've shared with each of you that the NARO Search Committee and the Board of Governors appointed Mark Feely from Houston, the Deputy Director in Houston, who had been a longtime acting CEO, to the position. He'll assume his role on May 2nd. With the approval of this board, I will continue to serve and work through transition issues with Mark through, and so that's a warm handoff with my last day at NARO being April 29th. So that's the plan. I appreciate everyone's support and encouragement.
This guy, I know we talked a little bit about it. Carl, this guy has a gravitas for that job?
Well, this new appointee,
he was the assistant director in Houston, and now he's going to be head of
there.
I said, does he have the gravitas for that job?
Well, he had been the fourth largest staffing
company in the country.
Yeah. He'd been the acting CEO for
a number of years.
He
knows the business.
He does, and he worked for Quandel for a number of years. He's been in Houston for about 12, 13 years. And then worked for Quadel doing housing consulting. He's also been the president of national of Texas NARO. He's next in line for head of Southwest NARO, and he's chaired a couple of committees. So I mean, he's a pretty substantive, thoughtful housing leader. Yeah, I think he's more of a consultant kind of guy. I think he's more of a Hauser and a more of a consulting kind of thing. He likes to go in, find problems, and fix them, and did that. He was, in a lot of ways, Lisa and Mark bonded over many years solving problems in the Housing Choice Voucher program, because Mark's, we've got a big program, but Mark's program is like triple our size. So, they worked together, and we really looked to Houston for, what creative things they were doing, because ours was a smaller version of that. We also looked at Houston on a lot of the homeless work as well. So I think Mark's going to do a terrific job, and I think the search committee bore out. We were pretty excited about the candidates and glad that Mark was successful. But yeah, it's a tough job.
Who's the ED in Houston now?
They just appointed a new guy named David Northern. David had been in Birmingham, Alabama, and then before that was in, he actually worked, Barbara knew him in Champaign, Illinois. Sure. But I do want to say to the board, thank you for all of you for your support and encouragement during this kind of weird time, and I look forward to being able to thank you more personally on the 21st over adult beverages. So. That's all I've got, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Does anybody have anything else you want to discuss?
Hearing none, the chair will entertain a motion to adjourn. Motion by Commissioner Apostolo, seconded by Commissioner Carrington. Is there any discussion here? None. All in favor signifies by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. And we are adjourned at 2:56 p.m. on Thursday, March 24th, 2020.